Welcome to Emil Franzing's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
You're darn tootin'.
Yeah, during tootin',
It's Saturday. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzing's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, Bunker de France across the way,
in the
Los Angeles area. Our good friend Todd Roberts, hello there.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And howdy.
That'd be duty.
That'd be a good name for a law firm. Howdy, howdy, and howdy.
Or howdy, howdy, and duty.
Cowboy law firm. Anyway, we got us a good one today. Hope you packed up the wagon, because we're taking a trip on 66. U.S. Highway 66. Terry Moore is our guest, and he's a photographer and author and such. And he spent a good 40 years photographing 66, and he's still not done.
On the road.
So we're looking forward to this. But before we get going with that, Bunker's got his.
Well, we're coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse. This week's edition of The Good, the Bad, and the Bovine. And the way this works... Oh, here's my theme song.
There's your theme song.
I have... Well, let me hear the chord.
It's a frog jump honor of Uncle Alvin.
Okay, anyhow, the way this works is I take today as a jumping off thing, kind of like the frogs do, but the 18th, but I go back 3 days in time and 3 days forward in time in no particular rhyme or reason. And I'm going to start out with the 16th of October in 1854. Actually, no, I'm going to start out the 15th.
Make up your mind.
Well, I don't want to short anybody out there. I know they're all waiting with bated breath.
Of course.
But this is important, though. Okay. On this date, John L. Sullivan was born. The great John L., or the Boston Strong Boy. Bare knuckles boxing heavyweight champ.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll move up to the 16th now. That's in 1859. John Brown, radical abolitionist, led raid on U.S. arsenal in Harper's Ferry, Virginia, in an attempt to start a slave rebellion. Also, this is a bonus, on this day, the 16th, in 1940, my good amigo Barry Corbin was born. And I couldn't say enough about him, so I won't.
Okay.
and then moving on over to the 17th in 1777. Oh, that's kind of got a thing.
It does. 1777.
British General John Burgoyne and his entire army, all 5,700 men, surrendered to American General Horatio Gates after the Battle of Saratoga. I can't even talk. Never can. And it was the first big American victory. Also on that date, another bonus, in 1928, good friend but now departed Don Collier came into the world.
Wow.
And he was a great friend and a good friend of the show.
Yep.
Now moving into the 18th, which would be today, but only in 1540, Hernando de Soto, Spanish conquistador, destroys fortified town of Mobila in the region of central Alabama, killing Mississippian chief Tuscaloosa.
Bad form.
That's a neat name, Tuscaloosa. Robert Mitchum's kid's name in Rio Lobo.
Mm-hmm.
He was Tuscaloosa.
Right.
You know, they like these slightly funny names. And then where we are? We're on the 19th. In 1720, John Woolman, Quaker preacher, merchant, tailor, journalist, early abolitionist during the colonial era, was born. Now, on the 20th, in 1874, this is for Emil.
Okay.
Charles Ives, modernist, composer, actuary, businessman, among earliest American composers to be recognized on a global scale, regarded as an American original, drew heavily on American folk, hymns, patriotic tunes, ragtime, marching band music, and parlor songs. Also on that date, which is every year, the 20th is Joel McRae and Francis D's anniversary.
Hey,
that's for Wyatt. Now we're going to finish out this here trip on 1861, the 21st, the Battle of Bull's Bluff, Virginia, Union troops suffered devastating defeat in second major engagement of the Civil War. And this is what the interesting footnotes on this. Colonel Edward D. Baker is the only U.S. senator ever killed in battle.
Interesting.
This is also the battle that got McClellan
fired.
Just pretty much so, yeah. And that was the week that was and wasn't.
And hey, and I saw something on one of the TV news websites
today
here in Tucson that they were talking about the Battle of Picacho Peak.
Yeah.
And first of all, it was no battle. You're lucky to call it a skirmish. The Compendium of Civil War Records lists a paragraph about the engagement, and that is it.
Actually, it was a hit and run. Oops, who are those guys? Let's get the hell out of here.
Exactly, and that's when the Confederates ran back to Tucson and headed out to Mesilla.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywho.
One other thing.
Yes, sir.
Today, if I'm right, is the anniversary of the United States Marine Corps.
It is, I believe, yes. So, but you're Navy, so...
Well, Navy, but, you know, we carried them everywhere. We called them seagoing bellhops. With all you Marines out there... Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha!
Semper Fi. All right, let's welcome our guest.
Bill Reed used to say about Marines and sailors, he used to say, you know, Todd, you got to have Marines on those ships. I said, why is that, though? He said, those swabbies go knucklehead. They go crazy. So you got to have somebody in there to hold a gun on them because they go batty. They go batty. So what's to make them batty out on the ocean and the rocking back and forth and the loneliness? He goes, no, if you had to mop a deck, a floor that was the size of a football field every day, you'd go batty too.
For sure.
That's why they had bosun mates.
Yeah. We called them privates.
No, bosun mate is like a master sergeant.
Yeah, I know. I know that. But, the mate is, but he gets everybody... under his command there, but why I say we called them privates.
Now, here's the funny thing, though. You go in the Navy, you'll see a bosun mate, and he's got hash marks up his sleeve.
Sure.
He'll have, like, 25 years in the Navy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a seaman apprentice.
Yeah, well.
Or a seaman, because he's been they're notorious for getting busted.
Of course. What else is there to do aboard ship, right?
Well, you get drunk when you get in port.
There you go. All right, let's welcome our guest, Terry Moore. Terry, welcome to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Glad to have you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy to be with you.
I guess this all started at the book fair at the University of Arizona back
in
March.
Yeah, it's Stuart's fault.
Stuart Rosebrook introduced you with
Stuart.
To Bunker, and it flew from there. So,
right.
It only took us half a year to get it done. But that's moving fast for us.
We're slow sometimes, you know, just want to make it right. But you're a photographer, and obviously want to be talking about the book that you've got out about Route 66. First of all, I want to know, when did you start with the camera? What was your first picture, do you figure?
First snap.
Well, I really started, I think, as I recall it, when I was about in sixth grade.
Hmm.
And I was influenced by a couple of neighbors who, one was a documentary photographer and one was just kind of an avid snapshot taker. And between the two of them, I got very interested in photography and I really was very excited about it. And then I got into high school and I got excited about other things.
Girls.
I kind of put it on the back burner for a while, even through college.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year in college, I had a girlfriend that was very arty. She painted and really was in the fine arts. And she encouraged me to start up doing photography again. And then I sort of started in earnest at that mm-hmm. point, but I had a break in there for about 10 years where mm-hmm. I took virtually no photos. I wish I had.
Well, and the equipment was changing quickly as well.
Well, your first camera was a Kodak Retina, which is a German-made camera, which means it's got to be a hell of a camera. Tell us about it.
That's what I had, and I also inherited my father's camera, which was an old Kodak, a folding camera.
Wow.
Bellows?
It had bellows. It was from the 30s. Mm. I can't remember. It had an odd an odd film. It wasn't a 120 film. It was its own film, and then finally they quit making the film. Hmm. But I used that a little bit when I was young, and I loved that camera.
Do you develop your own, or do you send them out?
Yeah.
He goes down to Walmart.
Yeah, right. When I first started out, I did quite a bit of my own developing, mostly mm-hmm. black and white. Mm-hmm. And then as the years rolled by and I got more active and started selling my work mainly to publications, mm-hmm. periodicals, at first, a lot of them were still just doing black and white. But over a period of about 5 to 10 years, everyone switched to color. Mm-hmm. So I sort of joined that bandwagon and switched to color.
So what
and
do you
I
think?
Still did black and white, but not much. But I never really went back.
But black and white is the art form of photography.
Well, do you think it's a better storytelling form?
I think
color?
So.
Yeah, I like it very much. I sort of really got involved in color, but I love black and white, mm-hmm. and I admire it.
Well, you studied, when you were 18, you studied with Ansel Adams, who was the master of black and white. That had to be a spectacular experience.
Right. That all is, it was just a wonderful time. Unfortunately, I had a big flood, and I lost all my early black and white negatives.
Oh, so boy.
Man. I don't know anything from those early days.
Man, that hurts.
That's
wow. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man.
Yeah.
So,
but it happened.
Did you grow up in Tucson?
No, I didn't. I grew up in northern Minnesota, and my father died when I was 6. My mother remarried when I was 9 to someone who lived in California.
Uh-huh.
And so we traveled down Highway 54 from central Iowa down to Tucumcari, met 66, and took that directly into Claremont, California, where we settled.
Mm-hmm. So was the shooting bug there as you were making this journey to California?
Well, you know, my eyes were as big as watermelons because outside of going to Chicago and Minneapolis, I'd never been out in northern Minnesota. And so I remember vividly things along the way, like Albuquerque really stuck out in my mind. And then mm-hmm. the other place really stuck out in my mind at the time, mm-hmm. like it was yesterday, was Cucamonga.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, later made famous by Jack Benny.
Mm-hmm. Todd, get in there.
So, Terry, you know, I have
yes.
to say that as much as the research that I did prior when I first was introduced to you by Bunker and I went online and I looked at all your stuff and so on, it was so much more powerful to me that day that you were so kind to allow us to come into your house and spend some time with you. And the way you described the photographs, you know, like the one of the Kachina, it's painted on the side of a wall and it says, Hopi and Navajo Arts and Crafts with a Kachina on
right.
It's yellow and it's peeling off. You know, most people would just walk by that and go, oh, that's cool. Back in the day, that was really cool. That was really neat. It was a great image. But you looked at it and said, here, you know, it's still there and it says a lot. So let me take a picture of it and see if people get from it what I got. And Noel and I did, in fact. And we felt that way about a lot of your work. And so, you know, do you wake up every day saying, I'm going to go find some inspiration? Or you just say, well, let me see what the day brings me?
Well, it's a little of both. I mean, I'm not as active as I used to be. I wish I was still shooting more. And I'd like to. And that's one of my new resolutions, to, you know, to become more active. I've got pretty slowed down there for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, physically I'm up to it. It's not that. It's just getting out there because you're always finding new and different things. It's
mm-hmm.
quite amazing, actually. Even right here in Tucson, there's things that I have photographs of that I've never seen anyone else's photographs of the same subjects, and they're
mm-hmm.
pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Bronco motel on Benson Highway.
Yeah.
You know, you probably all of you have driven by it, you know, over the, and not even realized it.
Take it for granted.
Yeah.
But those things are around, and I guess it's the same thing with 66 or any other kind of rural or semi-rural highway in the West, that if you really kind of slow down and really look, there's those little jewels out there, even today, you know, in our corporate world, you know, it's exciting to me.
Well, you know, one of the things I think is so neat about photography, and again, like you said, taking stuff for granted, is that photographers are historians. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, those pictures of Route 66 and the other places, the people say, oh, how quaint, how rustic. But they're going, but they're no longer there.
Right. Yeah, I've actually been photographing on the road seriously for 55 years.
Wow.
So I've got a lot of material that I can't say that no one else has, because there are people that do have things, similar things, or even the same subjects in some cases. But the first, I would say 15 years or so of me photographing the highway, kind of just as something to do, as I was driving back and forth between New Mexico and Arizona and California, I got into all of those things that kind of caught my eye at the time. And now they are historical documents, because a great many of them are gone. Now, the good thing is a few of them have been resurrected, or like the La Posada Hotel in Winslow, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real jewel.
Yeah, the old hotel up in Winslow.
Yeah.
The Harvey House building.
I try not to just be totally nostalgic in my work and try to just talk about the old days. I try to think about it from my perspective as an appreciation for those historical things that are no longer there. But also, I try to photograph things that are there. So if the three of us wanted to jump in the car and go tomorrow,
we'd be able to find it.
Okay, we got to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Our guest is Terry Moore. He's spent a buttload of time.
50 years plus.
Photographing the highways, specifically Route 66. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. We'll be back with much more of our program right after these messages. Do stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Can I say to winter, there's no way that nobody's gonna leave this town. Hell, I was born here, and I was raised here, and dadgummit, I'm gonna die here. And no sidewinding, bushwhacking, hornswoggling, crocker-crocker is gonna roll my biscuit cutter.
Now, who can argue with that?
This is the Voices of the West.
Boogie down Route 66.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. Our guest is Terry Moore here in Tucson. He's a photographer photographing Route 66, and here comes the big man himself.
Well, if you ever plan to motor west, take my way, that's the highway, that is the best. Keep the kicks out on Route 66.
Most excellent, Ray Benson. All right, man. Yeah. Bobby Troup wrote that song.
You know, I was listening to the Aaron Junis, listening to Gabby there and his rant.
Yep.
It reminded me of Todd and one of his rants.
Yeah, that was last week.
Yeah, the difference is that Gabby is more articulate than I am.
That's right.
And you can understand him better.
That's right. A lot better. Side wonder.
Terry, when did the bug bite to start doing stuff on 66?
Well, I have to kind of run backward just a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's I don't consider myself a roadie. You know, some people who are totally into specific places and things, and you know, they kind of becomes kind of their part of their persona. And of course, it is part of my persona. But in my case, it's more of my personal history. When I'll make it brief. But when my family moved to from northern Minnesota, we lived right off of Route 66, which was Foothill Boulevard. And I went to high school on Route 66. And I bought my first car on Route 66. So for me, it's always been since I was 9 years old, it's just been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
So it's just a natural progression to eventually start photographing it. And that's sort of a little bit of background. The other thing that's kind of an interesting aspect of this is, and this just all kind of coordinated somehow, you know, cosmically. When I was growing up in Claremont, it was in the mid to late 50s, the 60s, and it was basically a college town and a citrus town. Mm-hmm. And during that period of the 60s and 70s, I would say 90% of the groves were destroyed, and up popped subdivisions. Mm-hmm. And it really made a mark on my psyche. You know, I just hated to see it go. It was such a wonderful thing. Like we, you know, when it got cold in the winter, they'd fire up these old wind machines, and some of them were run by aircraft motors, and some of them old V8 Ford flatheads.
Oh yeah.
And it would just rumble, and it was so exciting. And then we even went out as high schoolers sometimes and would smudge in our friends' groves, you know. So, So, you know, all of that's kind of related to my background with the highway. Well, but to bring it more home, I kind of had it with Southern California in 1969, and I was intrigued with the Southwest and particularly New Mexico. And I moved to Albuquerque in December of 1969. And Albuquerque had just been bypassed. I mean, Route 66 mm-hmm. in Albuquerque yeah. had just mm-hmm. been bypassed. And so there were these old trading posts and various, you know, businesses and so forth that were along the old route. Most of the businesses that were in town survived, at least for a few years. But it just struck me because that was at the very moment when I said, I just want to be a photographer and do, you know, nothing else with my life. Mm-hmm. So I started going out, you know, when I had an hour or two here and there a day and going out, you know, and doing portions of the road and photographing some of these things that were basically turning back into dust, mm-hmm. you know, where these trading posts had been abandoned and people just walked away from them because there was no longer access to their business. And so some of those are some of my favorite photos. And then that sort of evolved into, by the time the late 70s rolled around, I, in the early 80s, the road was decommissioned officially in 1985. During that window there of late 70s or very early 80s, I probably worked on four or five stories, articles for magazines on the end of Route 66. Hmm. And at the time we all thought, well, it'll be over and it'll just be in our memories. You know, those of us that were fortunate enough to be involved with it. But what really happened, so that was the reason I did these articles about the end of the road. And then what happened, when it actually was officially decommissioned, all of a sudden, people came out of the woodwork and they said, this can't happen. This right. is the most famous road in America, if not in the world. Mm-hmm. And so now we're living in this revival, you know, which is a whole nother thing, but none of us could have anticipated that.
Yeah. Very
so that's
true.
Kind of a break.
Yeah, very, very true. I used to live in Florida and in Key West, and it's the end or beginning, how you look at it, of U.S. Highway 1, and goes all the way up to Fort Kent, Maine. Well, I-95 and the Florida Turnpike kind of take away from yeah. all of those small communities, and I had an opportunity to go to Daytona and see all those old motels and drive-ins and whatnot that were, wow.
Well, you know, I grew up in New Mexico, and I-40 and I-10 and then the one in north and south,
25
I think it is. But, you know, the beauty and the sadness is you go to New Mexico and all these little towns on the country roads, they're all stagnated whenever their economy died. You go to Grants, and it's the end of the uranium mining, and it still looks pretty much like it did
yeah.
when the mining stopped.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Really interesting. Todd, get in there.
So, you know, Terry, you're on this road, and you're saying to yourself, you know, like that picture that you did of the, that I love so much, it's on your website, it's the lead photo on your website of the, just the road, and it's a sun
kind
of with the cloud, clouding it mostly. You know, do you treasure more of what you've seen or what you think you're going to see, what you're going to find out there?
Well, I have to admit, I probably spend a little too much time and thought and just in general in the past, you know, but that I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think it's not particularly healthy. You know, I think it's important.
We do that every Saturday.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're all sort of history buffs, you know, yeah. in our own way. But at the same time, we want to experience life as it is today, you know, mm-hmm. in whatever genre it is. So I get a kick out of almost heading anywhere at this point, you know, to do something new and different. And, you know, and I'm hoping and praying, you know, that I stay healthy and I can do a lot more of that kind
Amen.
Of thing.
Well, let's take a moment to talk about 66 on 66 with 66 photos of the Mother Road. Mm-hmm. Let's promote that a little bit.
Your great book.
Thank you. This is a book I did in the fall of, it came out in December of 2018, so it's about a little over 6 years old now. But I have a friend who's a publisher here in Tucson. It's Tim Schaffner. And he publishes more literary kind of works. And because we'd known one another for 35 years, he said, you know, I'd be interested in maybe doing a photo book of yours, of Route 66. And I was really pleased because I had been trying to sell such a book for years and never really had much luck. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of jumped at it, and I said to my wife, Lynette, I said, well, I just can't figure out how to lay this book out or how to sort through all these photos I have because I have so many, you know, and I want the book to be really clean and simple and not be cluttered. And she said, well, quit stewing about it and just do 66 photos of 66.
You know, wives are like that.
Yeah, they are. They're very practical.
They're so much smarter than we are.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's how that all came about, and that was the title. Now, we had a foreword by Michael Wallace, who's an old friend, who's done the definitive work on Route 66. Mm-hmm. The last 40 years, and he and I met in New Mexico years ago, and we've been fast friends this entire time. So he did a forward, and another old friend of mine, Clark Warswick, who is a book publisher, photo historian, and photo collector, and we kind of worked together on this thing and put it together. And they, you know, I wrote a little blurb in the book, and then they each said something about the work. Both Michael and Clark did. Mm-hmm. So that was the bulk. There wasn't any real text. So we just would have one photo per page that would be with a caption. And that's the way we laid it out. And that's the way, you know, it came through. And it was a nice project. And it looks really nice.
Picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, listen. Let's flash forward now then. Route 66, a celebration of photos and stories from the Mother Road, which I understand is coming out, either has come out or is coming out this year.
I didn't follow you.
I understand. I read that you have another book coming out, Route 66, a celebration of photos and stories from the Mother Road.
Basically, the second book was going to be more of a journal, actually going all the way from Chicago to Los Angeles. Unfortunately, we're not going to publish it, mainly because of the costs involved in doing these big color books. Mm. Even we scaled the format down to a smaller format, the cost of paper now, the cost of printing.
It's gone
through. Yeah, so that project got put on hold, and I don't know, we may resurrect it.
Let's start a GoFundMe.
I'm sorry, what?
A GoFundMe.
GoFundMe, yeah.
Yeah, right. I need a big, good GoFundMe. Oh, boy.
All right.
Well, anyway, unfortunately, there's nothing new in the works at the moment.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought that up.
Well, we'll get a GoFundMe going.
Yeah.
We got to do our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France. Todd Roberts with you. Our guest, Terry Moore, photographer. And he's spent much of his life shooting on Route 66. Not people, or cars, but... maybe people in cars, photographs. That's what I'm trying to get out to you. We'll be back with much more of our program right after these important messages. Do not run away.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Sam,
yeah,
I've been thinking. You know about that $5?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I did borrow it.
Well, that's great.
I like to square that debt.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet you would. Oh, pal, you keep it. You keep it and pay me later, if there is a later. Because where I'm going, everything's free. But where you're going, you might need $5.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander with you. Bunker de France here, and in Los Angeles, our good friend Todd Roberts, and our guest, Terry Moore. He's written a book, had a book published of his photographs, so I'll get it right yet, about Route 66. So,
I just want to comment, that clip that was Don Collier, whose birthday is today, mm-hmm. with his good friend Bobby Hoy
yep.
from High Chaparral.
And I did not realize it was Don's birthday today when I chose
perfect.
That.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, this is something we keep talking about, Terry's Route 66, but he also shoots architecture, landscapes, yeah. Americana. We don't want people to think he's a one-trick pony.
No, he isn't.
Well, tell us about some of those other things.
Well, I have lots of what I would call Americana, but mostly Western Americana, because I've lived most of my life and worked most of my life in the West and Northern Mexico. And so I have similar kinds of topics, but then I have, other things that are more specific even. Like I've got thousands of photographs of neon signs and that type of thing. And then I've been intrigued, like with the highway, I've been intrigued with, it all started with Adobe architecture, actually.
Hmm.
When I was a kid in California and visiting the Palomares Adobe when I was in fourth grade and some of the missions at that time. And I sort of got into Adobes in my seventh grade science project. I made an Adobe brick. And finally, fast forward to 1995, I built my first Adobe house right here in the Tucson Mountains.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I moved to New Mexico, and I started photographing some of the buildings there that were really unique. And just as I was doing with 66, just more or less for fun. And then I worked a lot in that era for Audubon magazine. Mm-hmm. And all subjects, Audubon had a piece they were doing on Adobe in New Mexico, and they asked me if I'd illustrate it. And I said, well, I'm not an architectural photographer. And they said, well, we've seen some of your your architectural, Adobe photos, and we want you to do it. So I did it, and they did a wonderful layout, and that kind of opened the door. I ended up a little later in my career doing more architecture, including a book that took us from northern Africa to southern Spain to northern Mexico to the entire Southwest.
Wow.
And it was kind of tracing the origins of what would, for lack of a better term, kind of we consider as Southwestern style in architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And then each state is a little different. Texas has its own. New Mexico, obviously, is very unique that way. And then Arizona and California are unique. I mean, California's got more of the Mission Revival thing.
Yeah.
So we kind of put all those elements together, kind of starting with the desert as being the underlying theme and earth architecture. So that was another book I did a few years ago. But I just love it, but it's kind of back to the same old thing, you know, that I just started photographing like most photographers. They kind of photograph things they like, and one thing leads to another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you shoot digital, or do you still use film?
Yeah, now I do. I hung on to shooting film for a long time. I think I was one of the last people working as professional that was still shooting film as late as 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Most people had gone digital before then. But I finally gave in because everybody wanted digital images. You know, at this point, I'm just doing digital.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to ask this question because I really want to embarrass you. And that is, did you ever have a period where you were shooting weddings or school graduation pictures or stuff like that?
I did a couple weddings, and unfortunately, I had way too much fun. I know
the champagne.
I know you three are pretty. You all like the sauce, and I'm summing up my early wedding photography as being a total bust because I had way too much fun and took some very bad photos.
Ooh.
So that didn't lead to a career in wedding photography.
You know, probably. I was just thinking, you know, how come nobody's made a career of shooting honeymoon photos, you know, at the honeymoon set?
That's called penthouse and
pornography.
Some of those other places. Todd, you had something you wanted to get in there?
Yeah, Terry, I have two questions for you. Number one, what are the film shops, photo shops that are still operating in Tucson that you still like to work with and go to? If you have anybody you like there, you want to plug, number one. Number two, who are the photographers that gave you inspiration or still give you inspiration when you go back and look at their large books?
Well, as far as labs are concerned, there's one professional lab here in town that I really never have used, but I used Tempe Camera, and that was owned by an old friend who recently passed away. And Tempe Camera is not just a retail store and a repair shop. It's a professional lab. So that's who I go, you know, do all my printing and so forth. And I love working with them. So that's that. And then the other question was, I'm sorry, just remind me.
What photographers inspire you? You know, they could be current photographers, or maybe they're the old masters that you look at that you found inspiration originally, or you still find inspiration to, or find new inspiration.
Well, a number of people, but some of them are kind of predictable. You know, like you mentioned Ansel Adams. One of my favorite photographs of all time is his Moonrise Hernandez, New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
which.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar to most people, it's probably one of the most famous photos ever taken. That was an inspiration because I used to live right up the road, right off of 285, which goes right by that church. And then another photographer who I admired a great deal was Edward Weston. And one of my favorite Weston shots is a cup of coffee. An old style, not a mug of coffee, but an old style cup on a saucer sitting out in the middle of the Mojave, and it just coffee on it.
Wow.
What do you think of Stiglitz?
But it was made of cement or plaster of Paris or whatever. Yeah. I don't really know. But Weston took that in 1938 in the middle of the Mojave. And those are the kinds of things that cool. I really love.
Whimsical.
Did you ever run across friends with Ray Manley?
I never met Ray Manley, but mm-hmm. you know, I admired his work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a 1,000 people who I love their work.
Yeah.
You know, my old friend Dad Budnick, who passed away a couple of years ago, I admired his work a lot. He just did phenomenal photographs of people. And another photographer I absolutely loved, but I never came even close to duplicating any of her work, was Dorothea Lange. Mm-hmm. You know, the work.
Sure.
The 30s, mainly.
What do you think of Steinbeck's portrayal of the Mother Road, especially in Grapes of Wrath?
Well, you know, in a sense, it's like a Bible. You know, and the influence that's had on so many people and on our culture. I mean, he just summed it up perfectly at the right time. You know, he just, an interesting thing, you mentioned that. The first article I did on the death of Route 66, that it was for American Heritage Magazine. It was published by American Heritage Publishing. They had a quarterly magazine that was hardbound.
I remember.
It was all history.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Tom Pugh and I got a wild hair, and we said, well, we have this assignment from American Heritage to do something on Route 66 and on the Hokies. And we said, and I said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we go out to California and find some of the people that actually made the trip?
Mm.
So to summarize very quickly, one of the people we met was Merle Haggard's mama.
Wow.
So we met Flossie and interviewed her, and I photographed her, and I don't think anybody had ever paid any attention to her in the sense of in a professional way.
What
you know?
A treat.
And so that was a big deal. And then Dorothea Lange's second husband, you know, after she and Maynard Dixon got divorced, she went with a historian who's a professor at UC Berkeley. And at the moment, I'm very sorry, I don't remember his name, but we interviewed him, and then we went to Sacramento and interviewed Okie Paul, who had a joint out in the Delta. Mm. And you'll remember Okie Paul because his name was Paul Westmoreland. He was like Dick Whittinghill in L.A., you know, who used to dress up Western in the 50s and sell Chevys and slap them, you know, slap the hood.
Cal Worthington. To get up.
Yeah, well, Okie Paul was the Northern California version of him, but he wrote a song that I know you all will love called Detour, There's a Muddy Road Ahead.
Oh, wow.
So this was our first endeavor to do Adios to 66, was going and meeting these people that had made the trip. And I got some wonderful photographs out of that. American Heritage is a beautiful spread. And it's one of the most interesting pieces, I think, that were ever written on 66, to tell you the truth.
Wow.
But we were inspired by Steinbeck.
How cool.
So that's kind of the full circle to answer the question.
Okay. We got to do our last commercial break here on Amo Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. Our guest is Terry Moore, photographer. The book is about Route 66, and we will be back with much more right after these very important messages. Do not run away.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were built. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda,
That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
I guess I got the masked man to thank for keeping me out of more trouble, Bill.
Masked man? Call him that if you want to. Or you can call him by another name.
What's that?
The Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger.
This is the Voices of the West.
You can just see George Maharis and Marty Milner getting into that beautiful vet and hitting the highway.
I was just thinking about that. You know, the two guys in a Corvette convertible.
Yep. Yeah.
Route 66.
Route 66.
They could do that as a series today, I think.
I think so. Welcome back to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France. Todd Roberts with you, our guest Terry Moore, and the music of Nelson Riddle. Route 66. That was a pretty decent television show.
Yeah, it was.
And in fact, they were on location. Somehow or other, they got to Tucson. Now, that is nowhere near 66.
They would take side trips.
Okay, well, that explains that.
must have been a woman involved.
There must have been.
Oh, there was, yeah.
It usually is. And it was
Maharis. They'd be driving down 66, and they'd say, you know, gas is cheaper in Tucson. Let's go down and fill up.
Yeah, right. And then get back up to 66.
What now, Jerry?
I said it's closer to the border.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See?
Out of all of these pictures, Terry, that you've got on your website, which we will link to in the description about what today's program is dealing with, is there a favorite picture of 66 that you have? I took it.
You beat
I took
me.
A thunder.
I really don't have one. I've got four or five that I really love.
Okay.
One is the old trading post west of Albuquerque that's all spread out. It's got a couple arrows and a teepee in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Navajo Trading Post and Desert Hills Bar. So half of it Yeah, I love that. And then I have another shot that I really love of the highway that Todd's seen in person.
Yes.
Which is the two lanes, kind of very dark photo, kind of the two lanes just going off towards a mesa, which was taken from San Fidel, New Mexico, looking toward Grants. And then another one that I absolutely love is an interior shot of a cafe called the 66 Cafe in Ash Fork, Arizona. Hmm. And I went in there with my friend Tom, and we were doing our Ghost Road of the Okie story, and we went in there for a hamburger, and I turned around, and I looked at the table we were sitting at, and there was through the window was a lace curtain on the window, and then through the window, the E from the cafe was on the tabletop. It was a shadow.
Yeah. Nice.
Then I shot through the windows out, and it was really, it's just really beautiful, and it represents that era. You know, the lace curtain, the copper, an ashtray, you know, that had the wiggly bottom like one of those same beanbag chairs, and then it had a copper napkin dispenser.
I also... go ahead.
I just wanted to quickly mention, I knew that,
That's okay.
tell us your fondness for the photo of Chief Yellow Horse.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, go ahead. About Yellow Horse?
Yeah. I love that photo of him. He's so animated.
Oh, the Yellow Horse is incredible. I described him as the Barnum and Bailey of, or the P.T. Barnum of Route 66. Because he was really outgoing and very jovial guy. You know, Navajos generally aren't that outgoing. And he was very outgoing. And he would do anything to get you to stop. Fort Yellow Horse, we accept plastic money, cave buffalo, ancient Indian ruins, wooden Indians, petrified wood. I mean,
sounds like Jerry Geronimo Martin.
He was there before Bull was running Indian.
Right. I think. That family been there for years and years. But he was an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And then his cousin ran another trading post in Lupton too. But they were very different as far as personality goes.
Yeah. Okay, and now the other question that we always ask of our guests, and we do it at the end of the program so they can't run away. Do you have a favorite Western film or television show that you would share with us?
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh, put them on the spot.
The one you always watch when it runs at TV late night.
Well, believe it or not, my dog knocked me down, and I was kind of semi-bedridden for a week. And I started watching All the Lone Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great.
Hadn't really seriously watched those for quite some time.
They are great. Even in third reruns, they're great.
I've got to ask you this question then. Who was that masked man?
Ah, yes.
Well, in the early days, it was Clayton Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the radio days? I do.
Yeah, I don't remember the radio days. There was one season where there was a contract dispute and John Hart took over.
Yeah.
And John Hart had appeared in numerous episodes.
He did a movie version of it.
Yeah, he did numerous episodes with Clayton as an ancillary character. But then contract came back and Clayton finished it up. But you remember the radio show, do you, Bunker?
Oh, yeah. There was multiple guys. I think the guy that started first, I think it was the second year, he died in a car accident, and the announcer took over, and then somebody else took over, and then the announcer came back, and I think he finished it up until it went to television.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very long-running radio show.
Yeah, it was. All right, Terry Moore, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Really appreciate it.
And great photography, man.
May I just add one quick bit?
Please, yes.
Go for it.
I'm making prints at this point. That's how I'm making my living, because I no longer do photojournalism officially. Mm-hmm. And all my prints are available, and I have hundreds more than what's on my website.
Okay.
And all people have to do is go to Terrence Moore Photography, and they can get a glimpse of what I have. And if they're interested, we can go through the whole archive.
You bet. Well, we'll link to that.
No, and they would look great on somebody's wall.
On mine especially.
And we should meet before they close it up. For sure. I'll meet at the museum club in Flagstaff, because it's for sale, and I'm worried about it.
You know, we should get Stuart involved and have a Route 66 exhibition at the Charlotte Hall
Museum. There you go. Hey, next time we get together on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, it is Movie Saturday. We'll be out at the White Stallion Ranch, and we're going to be doing comedy teams. Let's do westerns, like Laurel and Hardy, the Marx Brothers, Abbott and Costello, the Three Stooges.
They did some short masterpieces,
I think. Anybody else we can find in there. So that's next time here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
78, 79, 80 O's, but get your butt on the route and go down 66.
There you go. So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.